Hey friend, are you struggling to find consistent paid speaking gigs? Do you want to know the exact 6 steps that you can take to find and book more paid speaking opportunities in 2024? Well, we want to make that easy for you. We've created a new free resource with the help of Dan Irvin, one of our highly successful speakers on our team. Dan has booked over $100,000 in paid speaking gigs in the last few years, and his 6-step process is going to help you maximize your chances of getting booked and paid to speak in any industry. You're going to learn how to get started prospecting, master discovery calls and proposal emails, and so much more. All you got to do is go to thespeakerlab.com/steps, and we're going to send you this 18-page guide straight to your inbox. Again, that is thespeakerlab.com/steps, and you're going to get that free guide. Hey, thanks for listening. You're awesome. What is up, my friend? Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. We are on episode 83, talking all about speaking and the business of speaking, the art of speaking. And today we're going to be talking about something related to speaking in an indirect kind of way. Back in episode 73 and 74, we talked a lot about travel tips for speakers. And there's a couple of popular episodes you're going to want to go back and listen to. Again, that's episodes 73 and 4. But today we are talking with a buddy of mine who runs a travel podcast and travel blog and teaches a lot about travel hacking. So we're going to be talking all about that today, about how you can use miles and points, why they matter for speakers, why you need to be paying attention to this stuff. I've earned a lot of miles and a lot of points from travel and have been able to take my family on some really, really cool trips as a result of the miles and points that I've earned from speaking and from traveling and speaking. So we're going to talk all about that today, about how you can use speaking and use the travel that you get to maximize that for free travel in the future. So definitely pay close attention to this one. This is going to be a good one. Today, we're talking with my buddy, Travis Sherry. He runs the podcast and the blog, Extra Pack of Peanuts. So you definitely want to check out that site as well, extrapackofpeanuts.com. All right, let's get into it. Here's my conversation with my buddy, Travis Sherry. Enjoy. What's up, my friends? Graham Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. Hey, today I'm joined by my good buddy, Travis Sherry, who runs the site Extra Pack of Peanuts, teaching people all about travel and travel hacking and miles and points in that whole world. And so if you are brand new to this, or you're maybe a veteran that you've dabbled with this a little bit before, I think you're going to really enjoy the conversation that we've got planned for today. So, Trav, what's up, brother? How are you?
I am doing awesome. Anytime I can A, talk to you, and B, talk about traveling, that makes a good day for me. So
it
I'm super excited about
this. Day indeed. So you run a Extra Pack of Peanuts. Great name. Give us the rundown of what the site is, what it is that you do, and kind of maybe even how you kind of got into what you're doing now.
Yeah, sure. So basically in 2012, I was teaching English in Japan, and that kind of kicked off my whole wanting to travel more than typically, 2 weeks a year type thing. And I was teaching English in Japan, and I didn't have a lot of money, and I wanted to travel cheaper. And so, of course, I turned to Google and somehow fell down this rabbit hole of people using frequent flyer miles and all these points and stuff to travel cheaper. And I thought, hey, this is too good to be true. You know, this sounds really scammy. There's no way people can actually get plane tickets for under $100 and all this. And did some research. I get pretty obsessed with stuff. And I found out, no, this can actually be done. And so January 2012, I started writing the site more just to get all the information that I was processing. And I was new to this. And I was 28, didn't have a credit card, didn't have a single frequent flyer mile to my name. And I just thought, all right, I'm going to start writing this because I'm sure some people might be interested, even if it's just family and friends. And there's a lots and ups and downs. And this is a long story, very, very short. But yeah, 4.5 years later, I still help people with travel. It's not all just miles and points. That's how it started. But that's still a big push of what we do, is just teaching people how to travel more and spend less. And some of that's through quote unquote travel hacking, using frequent flyer miles, hotel points to get cheaper, very, very almost free stays. And some of that's just also general travel tips on how to travel more authentically, more effectively, all that kind of stuff that, you know, the last 4.5 years we've learned from basically doing it and being on the road.
Let's, I want to go a couple different directions, a couple different things that we can talk about that you touched on there. First of all, let's start by talking about just those travel tips. Obviously, you've done a lot of international travel. You've done a lot of domestic travel as well here within the U.S. And so I want us to get to some of the travel hacking stuff and kind of maximizing miles and points and how we can do that as speakers. But as someone who's traveled a lot, what are some things that you have learned along the way? What are some things that really helped to make Because travel can be a lot of fun, but it can also be very tiring, can be very grueling, especially in the form of which a lot of speakers do it, in which they're doing it a lot. Yes. So how do you make travel enjoyable? What are some things that have helped you to enjoy the experience along the way?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we could talk for hours about this, but one of the things that I always suggest people do, whether you're traveling for business purposes or for pleasure, and obviously if you're traveling for pleasure, this can happen a little easier, but I always tell people, and I had to learn this myself the hard way, to try to slow down a little bit. And what I mean by that is, you know, we could travel wherever we wanted, whenever we wanted, because we were location independent. So that's great. But what we found ourselves doing was, you know, a couple days in one city and then a couple days in the next, and, you know, we were just bouncing around really, really quick, which is great, especially if you want to see a lot of stuff and it's your first time in an area or a region or anything like that. But, you know, to really soak it in and enjoy it, over the last year and a half, we've really slowed it down and we've said, okay, let's spend more time in one area versus jumping around as much, because we've just found that it creates more authentic experiences. It doesn't burn you out, as you say, as you know, we can feel that way. Like I had travel burnout about a year and a half ago when Cry for Me, we were sitting in Bali and I was like, you know, I didn't even want to be there. And that's how I knew, like, okay, we're going too fast. Like, we need to take this a little easier. So traveling slower. And I think there's ways to travel, even if you can't travel slower, travel a little more authentically. And so this might not work for all speakers all the time, of course. But, you know, there are a lot of stuff that we do. We stay in accommodations that aren't always the quote-unquote big box hotels, Hiltons and Hyatts and stuff like that. And there's definitely reasons for staying in those, and we do at times. But, you know, we'll try to rent apartments, especially if we're going somewhere for more pleasure, get in different parts of the city, get in different areas that there might not be hotels in, and kind of, you know, give yourself a better chance to see a different side of something than you might if you're just going through really quickly, staying in these hotels and being around all these other tourists.
Yeah, I think that's some great advice, because I, you know, admittedly, as a speaker, I've been to pretty much all the major cities within the U.S., and yet very few of them have I actually seen, you know what I mean? Where yeah, literally right. Go from the airport to the hotel, do my thing, go back to the airport. So there's a lot of times where, like, I'm barely out in fresh air. I'm just in a hotel or I'm in a conference center or whatever. And there's, you know, I talk to someone like, oh, I went to such and such city. And they're like, oh, did you go see, you know, this museum or this park or this whatever? It's like, no, I didn't do anything. I went to the hotel and went back to the airport. And so there's definitely that taking the time to just enjoying the journey, you know, and just taking time to be present and recognizing, you know, a city that you're in or a new place that you're in, and just doing some exploring there for sure.
Yeah, and if you don't have a lot of time, you could still do it. You know, maybe you add on one day, either before or after. I mean, typically, I guess if you're speaking, maybe you'd want to do it after, so you know you're finished, you can relax, you can mellow out a little bit. You know, if you can do one day or even like a half day, you know, maybe you finish that night and then the next day you don't fly out until the evening, and so you know, and you just wander around, and that's what I love doing, especially in cities, is not really having any plans, just getting out, wandering around. Just walk around, you know, finding like a little restaurant or like a, you know, stuff that you might not see if you were, you know, had a set schedule of like, all right, I'm going to go to this museum or this place or that place. Yeah. And just kind of feeling, I guess that's the best way I could say it, like feeling the city or feeling the area you're in by just letting yourself go and not really expecting things.
Yeah. It sounds touchy-feely and cute, but yes, it is. It can work. Okay. What other things? So just enjoying the journey, being present in the moment whenever you're traveling. Anything else that helps just to make the journey smoother?
Yeah. I mean, for us, this is going to be different, I think, than a lot of your listeners. But for us, we typically wouldn't book accommodations when we first started ahead of time. And what we've learned...
Yeah, I'm going to not recommend that.
I'm going to not recommend that anymore as well. So what we've learned is that there is a fine line between what we were kind of just talking about, like not having set plans and letting yourself go, but having enough structure. And so I think finding that balance can help too. And obviously a lot of the people that are listening to this are probably already going to have accommodations and stuff in place. But yeah, having some structure has really helped us enjoy it so that you're not always anxious about, you know, when you get there, what you're going to be doing and things like that. So it sounds contradictory to what I just said, but I think that if you have the structure in place of like the big picture stuff, like, okay, I know how I'm going to get in between these cities. So doing enough research ahead of time so you know what's going on versus then that kind of allows you to have that freedom to spend some time wandering around, if that makes sense. You know, if you're organized a little bit, it allows you to have the freedom on the other end.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally accurate. Let's talk about this for a second. You mentioned that you do a lot with the miles and points world. And so naturally, as speakers and travelers, we tend to hopefully accumulate a lot of miles and points. So if I'm just getting started, why don't you first of all just give us like a high level view. What are miles and points? I've heard of them. Are they legit? How do they work? What do I do with them once I have them? Just kind of give us that view.
Sure. And if you're someone who is listening and you have no frequent flyer miles, you know, that was exactly where I was 4.5 years ago. Even though I had flown a decent amount, I thought they were only for people, you know, who flew all the time. Like, they weren't worth it to me because I was flying a couple times a year at that point. And since that has changed now, but basically what happens is when you fly on an airline, or, you know, through credit cards or sign up bonuses or spending on that credit card or online promotions, all that kind of stuff, you earn these miles, these frequent flyer miles, or conversely, these hotel points. And they work basically the same, ones with airlines, ones with hotels. And that allows you to then substantially reduce the cost of your flights and or your hotels to the point that they're almost free. So case in point, you know, we've flown to about 30 countries in the last 4 years, and all of the tickets that we've used our miles and points for have been under $100. So, you know, if you're flying, let's say you're going from New York to Paris, that might be $800. Well, if you use your frequent flyer miles, you can get a ticket. You're only paying the taxes and fees, so you might get a ticket for $75 or $80 or something like that.
So again, to be clear, like you said in the last 4.5 years, you've done 30 plus countries, and a high majority, if not all of those, have come because of miles and points. True.
Yeah. The only time we ever pay for a ticket is if, and this is another little trick, if there's a mistake fare. And that's basically exactly what it sounds like. Something, there's a computer glitch, and all of a sudden, you know, we get a ticket to South Africa for $300 when it should have been $1,500. You know, then we'll buy it. But if there aren't those mistake fares, yeah, we use our miles and points to go everywhere. And whether that's domestically, there's a really cool perk called the Southwest Companion Pass, which I know you know about and have had, that allows a partner to fly for free with you anytime you hop on a Southwest flight. So there's a lot of domestic opportunities, and there's obviously a ton of international opportunities as well.
Man, you just get me excited talking about mistake fares. That's next level stuff. We'll save that for another day. But I know we got a did I tell you our best mistake fare story?
Not yet.
I'll give you the quick nutshell. We took six of us, our family of five plus my mom, and went to Hawaii in first class round trip for $92 each. Oh, dude, it was crazy. Dumb.
Yeah, mistake fares, and those are for people who are obviously, there needs to be some flexibility there, because typically they come up and they're gone within 8 or 10 hours when someone figures out that there's a mistake.
If that.
And if that. And, you know, sometimes they're really certain dates and things like that. But if you ever can take advantage of them, they are fantastic. We've done Italy for $125, Spain for $200, South Africa for $300. We went to Bali for, I think, under $300. So, yeah, we mix those in with the miles and points to basically create, as we said, like really, really, really cheap flights.
And to be clear, like, again, they are very rare, and you have to be willing to pull the trigger immediately and just ask questions later. But if you can get on one, it's a fun experience. So, okay. So if I'm just getting started with miles and points, how do I even get miles and points? Where do they come from? If I'm traveling a lot, do I just naturally get them, or how does that work?
Yeah. So here's what I thought when I, you know, like I said, 4.5, 5 years ago, when I was just getting into this, I just assumed that the only way you could get miles and points is through flying. I think that's a natural assumption for most people. It's like, all right, frequent flyer miles means you get on an airplane and you fly and you get those miles, which is true. You can, and if you're flying a lot, this is a great way to earn frequent flyer miles. But for a lot of people, and so to put it in perspective, if you're flying across the country and it's 3,000 miles, you'll earn typically 3,000 miles for that flight. So if you're flying a lot, this will add up. But if you're flying even only semi-regularly, it takes a while for that to add up. And so the quickest way to kind of supplement the actual flying miles that you get is to get a really good travel credit card. And a lot of people probably already have these in their wallet, and they might not even know. They opened up a credit card at some point and they use it and they get these points, but they've never been able to use those points. And that's on purpose. The airlines and the credit card companies don't want you to know exactly how to use the points, because if they make it super, super easy, that means you redeem it. That means it costs them money. So they kind of, put this veil over it a little bit, right? And you and I both know it only takes a couple hours of work, sometimes not even to kind of pull it off and get started. But I bet there's a lot of people out there listening who have earned miles and points, and they've said like, oh, I tried to use them once and I couldn't, and then they've given up, and that's kind of what the airlines hope for. So my recommendations are, A, if you're flying, always make sure you're getting miles for that. And that's as simple as whatever airline you're flying on. You know, you open up a frequent flyer account with them. It's totally free. You know, you get a number. And then, like, let's say you're flying on American. Every time you fly on American, you give them that number and you just accrue miles that way. Really simple, really easy. The second way and the big way to supplement it is by getting a rewards credit card that gets you the miles that you might, you know, the better miles. And we could talk about what those are in a few minutes. But you get that and then you get a sign-up bonus. So you might get 40,000, 50,000. Sometimes it's all the way up to 100,000 points for signing up for the credit card and, you know, making a minimum spend requirement. And so you get 100,000 miles, or let's even say like 60,000 miles is more typical. That's a round trip ticket to Europe. It costs 60,000 miles to go in economy to Europe. So right there, just from the sign-up bonus, you're getting a free flight. And then as you put spending on that credit card and things like that, you accrue, you know, a point for every dollar you spend, or sometimes 2 points if it's special categories and all. So you gain some points that way. And then the third little piece of it, and this is a little higher level, and not everyone does this, and I only do it here and there, but some online shopping portals. Like if you're making a big purchase, like you got to buy a computer or a TV, if you shop online for it, and route through a shopping portal, you can get like sometimes 10 points for every dollar you spend. So if you spend $1,000, you're getting 10,000 points as opposed to just 1,000 if you were to not go through that shopping portal. So those are the ways that I use to earn what has been over 4 million frequent flyer miles now in the last 4 years.
Yeah, I need to total up ours. I know that we're in the several millions. And I tell you what, even like you said, it makes a huge, huge difference. Because I know early on, I think you, as a speaker and traveling, you're earning those, what is lovingly called as button seat miles,
right?
Actually earning them. And you're just like, well, I got these, but what do I do with them? But then you start redeeming them for trips and travel. And it makes a huge, huge difference in terms of what you are able to do. I know from our family that we've been able to take a lot of trips for all five of us to go all different types of places. And both, again, you mentioned the airlines, but also even just hotels of redeeming them for free stays and free nights. It can really, really make a big difference. So you'd mention that like a round trip economy ticket on average is going to be around 60,000 points or miles. What other, like domestic, what does that look like? Hotel nights, what does that look like for redemption? And I know it can vary a lot, but why don't you give us some views there?
Yeah, so just so people have some perspective or some to understand the points we're talking about here. Yeah, to get to Europe, 60,000 round trip. To fly domestically in the U.S., it's usually 25,000. Again, round trip. A lot of airlines, what's really cool too, and this might be really good for some speakers as well, is a lot of airlines will allow you to book one-way tickets. So let's say you're going from New York to Dallas for a speaking thing, but then, you know, you have to go Dallas to San Francisco for another speaking engagement or whatever it is. You know, you don't have to do the 25,000 round trip New York to Dallas, Dallas back to New York. You could go one way for 12,500, then you could go out to San Francisco for 12,500 and then come back, something like that. So that's a really cool thing, like a really cool perk of using miles, whereas, like, you know, one-way tickets aren't really that popular when you're paying out of pocket. And Southwest does it, and the airlines are starting to go towards that because people's travel habits are changing some. But it's just a kind of an extra perk of miles is that typically you're allowed to do one-way stuff for half the price, which just allows you more flexibility. So 25,000 round trip in the U.S. If you're going down, you know, to the Caribbean, it's usually like 35,000. South America can run between, you know, 40,000 off season to like 60,000 during peak season. Going over to Asia, 60,000 to 80,000. So those are the miles that you're looking at. You could get anywhere in the world in economy for under 100,000 points. You know, Australia, same, it's about 80,000. And then hotel nights, like you said, vary dramatically based on the brand. So like the highest end Hilton will now cost you 90,000 Hilton points, whereas the highest end Hyatt will cost you about 30,000. So that's where we get into talking about, I always tell people to think of these points as a currency, you know, and that's why not always the highest number. If you look at sign up bonuses and you see a card that says, hey, get 70,000 Hilton points, and you think, oh man, that's wow. Like, imagine the stuff I could do with it. Well, you know, you want to stay at the best Hilton in the world. That's not even going to get you a free night. Whereas, you know, 40,000 Hyatt points would get you a free night at the highest end of Hyatt. So I always tell people, think of it as a currency. Same as you would with money. You know, grant, if I said to you, like, all right, you can have like 100 Mexican pesos or 100 US dollars, well, you're going to check the exchange rate and you're going to say, yeah, give me the US dollars, right? And it's similar with hotel points, with frequent flyer miles, and with these bank reward points, is that some are just more valuable because they allow you to do more, or they're more flexible, or they're, you know, whatever we want to call it, value per point is much higher.
Yeah, I would totally echo that, that basically a point is not a point is not a point. Like, it all kind of depends on the situation and circumstance, and what that point is what account that is in. And so, even like you mentioned before, and this is something I always recommend to speakers when you're getting started, especially since you're going to be doing a lot of traveling, is to go ahead and, because they're free, get those frequent flyer accounts with everybody. Like, literally, I have, and I know you do too as well, you know, frequent flyer accounts with airlines that I haven't traveled for years, but when I do travel with them, I want to get those points. I want to get something for that. And so I've got them with you know, all the major hotel chains and airlines, and even rental car companies, Amtrak, trains, cruises. I mean, you can get them with just about anybody now, so that you are, again, earning some of those points that may on their own may or may not be worth a ton, but collectively with other things that you may be doing, may all of a sudden you have something that you can turn into some type of trip or redemption.
Yeah, and here's an important thing to note, and I didn't realize this when I was first starting either. You know, think of these points like they live in separate spheres. I can't say that. I'm not a good speaker.
Separate,
I can't say that.
Like 10 that is times that is hard. Fast. Yeah.
In separate spheres. And so, like, if you have American Airlines miles and you have United miles, like, you can't combine them. So I get this question a lot, and this is what I thought in the beginning. Like, all right, I'm just getting quote unquote frequent flyer miles. So, like, sure, they can all just like be used together. They can't. You know, if you have American Airlines miles, they live in one sphere. If you have United miles, they live in another sphere. You can't combine them and say, all right, I have 50 of one and 50 of another, so I have 100,000 points. I want to go to Australia. You would need enough in each sphere to take that trip. Now, not to make it too complicated, but you could go one way with one and one way back. That's one way to do it. But they are different. And so that's just something really important to know. And then, but on top of that, what the airlines do that that is pretty cool is they all have, most are part of alliances. So, for example, American Airlines is part of this alliance called Oneworld. So American Airlines won't themselves fly to Sydney. So, you know, you can use your American Airlines miles on American Airlines or any of their partner airlines as well. So that's important to note. So, like, if you could only use it on American Airlines, you could never get to Australia because they don't have a flight that goes there. But you can fly on their partner airline, Qantas, and get down there. It's the same thing. You book with American Airlines. You know, you're using your American Airlines miles. You follow American Airlines rules, but you're just flying on one of their partner's planes. So that opens up basically the whole world for the three big alliances because they have partners. You know, they have partnerships with airlines all over the world. So there's very few places you can't go on miles because of these partnerships.
Well, and you could speak to this better than I could, but generally speaking, those alliances are really going to more come into play on international travel.
Definitely.
So for example, domestically, the big players of American, United, Delta, even Southwest, none of them are buddy-buddy. They're not partners.
Right.
So really more when you're going on the international stuff, like you mentioned in the situation where American doesn't fly to Australia, but they have options to get you out of Australia where you can still use the miles and points.
Yep.
Gotcha. Okay. So all these different types of miles and points, you mentioned we mentioned the button seat travel, and you also kind of touched on the credit cards. I know that's how you and I have gotten the bulk of the miles and points that we've had. I think that's been a misconception for some people know that myself and then obviously our family, we travel quite a bit and a lot of it is through miles and points. And so the assumption is, well, like, oh, okay, you're a speaker, you travel a lot, therefore you earn a lot. And like, yeah, I earn a lot naturally from those button seat miles, but a lot of what we earned has come from credit cards. And so we could go into, you know, a lot with this and what exactly that looks like. But why don't you give us kind of the nutshell of how some of these credit card bonuses work? You touched on it earlier, but tell us a little bit more about that and kind of how, if I want to get, you know, American miles, what does that have to do with a credit card?
Right. Great question. And this is your assumption, or the people's assumption, that you earn it from flying from button seat is, again, the assumption I had 5 years ago and until I started learning about it and the light bulb went off. So if you thought that, you're in good company. I think like 95% of people think that. I will tell you that of the 4 million frequent flyer miles that I've earned in the last 4 years, less than 1% have come from actually flying. So we're talking almost all have come through credit cards or these promotions. And so with the credit cards, how it works is we'll take American Airlines, for example. What they do is American Airlines will have a card, like a co-branded credit card with a bank. So for right now, they have a credit card with Citi, with Citibank. So what you do is you would go and you could, typically you'd apply online. I guess you could apply in a branch as well, but most people just do it online. And you'd say, all right, well, I'm looking to get some American Airlines miles. I have some from flying or I live near an American Airlines hub or they have good flights wherever I'm going, what have you. And so what you do is you go in. And you look at the card and you say, okay, this American Airlines card will give me 50,000 American Airlines miles if I spend $3,000 in 3 months on it. So you do have to make sure that you can hit that minimum spend requirement. That's always like first thing is make sure you can hit that, because if you can't, you're not going to get the sign up bonus. And then it's you're shooting yourself in the foot. So you say, okay, I can spend $3,000 in 3 months on this credit card. That's cool. You spend that, so you get 50,000 American Airlines points. And it's as simple as when you're signing up through a credit card, you put in your American Airlines frequent flyer number. And if you don't have one, you take 3 minutes and you get one, and then you put it in. And so every time you get that bonus, that 50,000 point bonus, after you hit that minimum spend requirement, takes a couple months, And then every time you use that credit card, you're just accruing American Airlines points. So, you go out to dinner and it's $30, you're getting 30 American Airlines points. So that's the really short version. And it really is that simple of how they work. And like you said, you can go down the rabbit hole and then I've opened up a bunch over the years, but I always tell someone, start with one or two, or maybe you already have a credit card that you're using, but you don't know how to use the points. Like you're already getting them, you just didn't even know you were. And that's what you do. Start with one or two, get used to it, make sure you're paying it off every month. Like that's the most important thing. If you're not paying it off, then those miles are pointless, because you're paying all that money in fees and interest. So make sure you're paying it off, and then make those points work for you, because that's the second part. Like the earning them is usually the easier part to understand. Get a credit card that works, spend on it, pay it off. Okay, you're earning these miles. But then, of course, the second part is, all right, how do I actually use them? So that's the short version of how you earn frequent flyer miles through credit cards.
Yeah, and just to be clear, and you kind of touched on this, but I know for me personally, like we've opened a lot of different credit cards over the years just to get these miles and points. We use a credit card for most of our business spending, which is something we could touch on in just a second here. But I know for us, we don't carry a balance on any card. We have zero credit card debt. We have zero debt on the business, but zero personal debt as well, actually. But all that to say, like, if you're going to get into this, I always tell like friends that are just like, oh, how do I do this? Like, you can do this, but you've got to be very, very cautious about this. And so if you're going to get a credit card, even just for the having the ability to get those miles and points, if you're creating a financial mess for yourself because you're not responsible, then don't do this.
Yeah, it's like a big, I wish I could like put a neon light up every time I say that, and like it would hammer into someone's head, because it is. You definitely, this is only for people who are financially responsible, who have been doing it. Maybe if you've never had a credit card before, that's fine too. Like my first one was a miles earning one, but you just take it slow and make sure you're paying it off. And I set all my stuff to auto pay, which makes sure I'm not accruing interest, but you also don't ever look at it as, so I've had some people say, oh, well, I have to spend $3,000 in 3 months to get these points, so I'm going to go like get a TV or a puppy or whatever. You're like, no.
It's a really nice puppy.
Yeah, this should only be, anything you would normally buy, this should only be for that. It's nothing extra or anything like that. So that's our little get up on the soapbox, make sure people understand that. But if right. You are responsible, what's great is that then you can play this quote unquote game and you can, it's like getting a reward for being financially responsible, and you should. So that's what's cool about it, is once you get the system down, you're like, all right, well, now I'm getting rewarded for the fact that I have good credit and I'm paying this off and I'm reaping the benefits of basically free travel.
Well, and to speak to what you were talking about earlier about the earning button seat miles versus the credit card miles, again, I think people have this misconception, for me personally, that, oh, you travel a lot, therefore, I couldn't get all those miles of points because I don't travel as much as you. I just looked up, just out of curiosity, on my American account. American's the primary airline that I fly, and I've earned 776,000 button seat miles. That's a lot of button seat miles, 776,000. That's over several years. But my total lifetime is over 2.2 million miles. So if you do the math there, that means that $1.5 million miles have come from things that don't involve butt in seat traveling. So again, you can earn, my wife is another good example. We never pay for tickets for her. She never flies anywhere that's not where she's getting, where she's redeeming miles or points. Yet her account right now at this very moment has like 500,000 miles in it for American. Yep. And she's never paid for a ticket. So there's a lot of ways that you can earn those. So let's touch on that to kind of wrap up here. If I know that I'm traveling a lot, I'm speaking a lot, I'm getting a lot of travel expenses, and that's, again, another great thing about being a speaker is that I remember noticing this on early on with my dad, is that he used to do a lot of traveling, and so he would then redeem some of those miles for us to go on family vacations later, but they were all things where he was being reimbursed for the travel. So it's like, wait a minute, we're getting to reap the benefits that someone else is paying for? And that's really the way it works for speakers, is someone else is paying for the travel, and yet you are keeping the miles and points, and so it's kind of that, you know, additional perk and benefit there. So if I know that I'm going to be doing a lot of traveling, are there certain credit cards that I should be using that may be more valuable or worthwhile than others?
Yeah. And like you said, a point is not always a point is not always a point. So the best ones that, and this is almost across the board, unless for some reason you live in a certain area that only one airline services, you know, you're in like a small town or something. But typically, the best points that you can earn in the frequent flyer world are Chase Ultimate Rewards points. And these work a little different than those American Airlines points that I talked about earlier, because what happens here is you earn points with the bank, with Chase. But why they're more valuable is that they provide a lot of flexibility. And so when you earn those American Airlines miles I talked about earlier, you can only use them to fly on American Airlines, which is pretty good. That's also a very good card. But with these Chase points, you can do like three different things. One, you can transfer them to different airlines. So you can transfer them to United, which is an awesome airline for, you know, flying domestically and especially for flying internationally. You can transfer them to Southwest, which, you know, we know is great for domestic or Caribbean or anything like that. And there's a few other random airlines, but those are two big ones. The second thing you can do is you can transfer them to hotels, which is huge, especially for people who are speaking and you know, you're only going to take maybe one or two vacations a year. So you have your flights covered, but you know, now you want the hotels covered as well, so you can transfer them to Hyatt, like we talked about, which is a great hotel chain where the points are worth a decent amount. You can transfer them to Marriott, things like that. And then the third thing you can do is you don't even have to transfer them. If you just want to buy any ticket, you can go on Chase's website, and let's say you have 100,000 points. That equates to, I think, like $1,300 worth of points. So you can go on there, and you can say, all right, I want to book my flight with this. And if the flight's $800, you use, you know, that amount of points, and you still have $500 of Chase left, and then you book your hotel. So what's good about that third option is that you have ultimate flexibility because you can book any flight and any hotel. Whereas when you transfer to an airline, not to get too confusing, but if you think of a plane, and let's say there's 300 seats on a plane, I have no idea if that's right or not, but this is easy for math. There's 300 seats on a plane. They might only open up 100 of them for people who are using frequent flyer miles. So they might fill up fairly quickly. And then, you know, so you might not be able to get the exact flight you want if there's not availability. If you use the third option where you're using your Chase points as cash, you can book any flight because it's just a sliding scale of how much you would actually pay out of pocket. So the Chase points are great. And so on that note, what I always do, the two main cards that I use one for my personal spending, and that's called the Chase Sapphire Preferred, and it earns you those Chase points, and it usually comes with a bonus of about 50,000 right off the bat, which is a great bonus. It has kind of cool bonus categories where anytime you have meals out, you get 2 points for every dollar you spend instead of just one. And then for the business side, they have kind of like, it's like a sister card to that. It works the same, and it's called the Chase Inc. Plus. And so I use that for all my business expenses. That way I can keep everything separate, but I'm still earning those Chase points. So both of them earn the same type of points, and you can easily online combine them into one account whenever you want. It literally takes a minute. So you're earning the same types of points, these Chase points, which in my opinion, and in most people's opinion, are the most valuable points out there. So that's kind of the ones I always tell people to start with. Really easy. Customer service is awesome at Chase. You can call up. You can get someone on the phone pretty easily right away. I've never had any issues with them. So I'd go with the Chase Sapphire Preferred for personal expenses and then that Chase Inc. Plus for business expenses. And that'll just keep it really clear when, you know, when you do go for taxes, and we could, you know, we're not going to get into that quagmire, right? But when you have your own business and your personal, it keeps it really clear. And those are the two that I would recommend starting with and getting a good solid base of Chase points. And then if you want to go like we've done, Grant, later on, and maybe in like 5 or 6 or 7 months, open up another one because you're like, yeah, I'd like to have some American miles as well. Then you can go open up the American card and things like that. But the best two right off the bat, the best business is the Chase Inc. Plus, and the best personal one's the Chase Sapphire Preferred.
Yep, totally would agree. Well, I've got the exact same setup. So for our personal, everything goes on our Chase Sapphire. And we're talking about this in the context of business and speaking, but this is exactly what we do in our personal is all of our personal expenses go on to that Chase Sapphire because we're earning points on those and we're paying that off constantly. So again, we're never carrying a balance on that. And then on the business, we use the Chase Inc. I think we have the Chase Inc. Bold actually, and just a variation of that Chase Inc. Plus that Trav had mentioned there. But yeah, so and even like you touched on, keeping all of that stuff separate. Don't just think, oh, I'm just going to get one Chase card and put all my business and personal. No. You need those separate. And we've talked about that in previous episodes. But yeah, we use the Chase Sapphire on the personal and then the Chase Inc. Bold on the business. That's where the majority of our spending goes. As a little next level hack, one thing that we do is we have a Citi American Airlines card that we get 3 times the points per dollar spent on American Airlines. So anytime we are buying an American ticket, we use that specific card because we're getting more for that. And then also in a similar vein, a lot of the travel that I do, I stay at Hilton properties. And so we have an American Express Hilton card that gets us 12 points per dollar spent at Hilton. And so I use that whenever I stay at Hilton properties. And so I keep those cards, extra cards in my wallets, again, just for that very specific purpose that I'm only using those if I'm at a Hilton, or I'm only using those if I'm booking an American flight. But as a general rule, again, just for simplicity, everything else for the business at least goes on that Chase Inc. Bold.
Yeah, and those two cards, like I said, we can end it with this too, because if people are going to get into it more, you know, you might open up cards here and there, and you know, I don't want to scare anyone away with how many cards I have. I don't. Both me and you were talking the other day, and we were like flipping through the book. Like we have a book of cards. There's little plastic like baseball card holders and all. Yep. You know, I think I'd have to count, but probably in the last 4 years, I've opened up 50 cards now. And again, I'm not telling anyone to do that now, but you know, you can. And then we won't get into why it's good for your credit actually, but just know that it actually does help your credit in the long run. And again, I have stuff on my website that explains why, like really nerdy credit stuff. But yeah, and so, you know, as you go down that path, you know, you can start accumulating a lot of points, but start with these two. And even to this day, you know, I probably have 30 open credit cards, but in my wallet, there's like 4 different ones. And that's what I tell people. They're like, well, how do you keep track of it all? I said, well, I don't. Those other 26 I'm not using. You know, they're just sitting off. I got the sign-up bonus. They're sitting off to the side. I'm only using 2 or 3 or 4 at most because, you know, even I would never want to have to keep track of the spending I do on 30 cards. So you kind of use it to make the minimum spend, and then you set it aside, and then you have your kind of go-to everyday cards, and those would be the Chase Sapphire Preferred and the Chase Inc. Plus, or like Grant said, the Chase Inc. Bold, which is like their older version of it. I don't even know if you can open it anymore, but those are the two best for personal and then business.
Yeah, and again, we are just scratching the surface. So that's why Trav started the Extra Pack of Peanuts blog. Is just there's a ton more nuance. So if you really want to geek out on this, definitely check out Trav's blog. He's got a lot of great stuff there. Trav, tell us again where we can find the blog and the site and where else we can go to find out about you.
Yeah, for sure. So again, it's extrapackofpeanuts.com. I'm on Twitter, it's Pack of Peanuts, or Instagram. You can follow our travels at Pack of Peanuts. Everything lives there, so you can find it out. We have a little the best place if you're unfamiliar with this, or even if you're unfamiliar with the site, which I like to think we have a lot of reach, but probably not that much. So you're probably unfamiliar with the site. Check it. There's a little start here tab, and what we've done is like kind of chronologically ordered it to say, all right, here's like if you're brand new to frequent flyer miles, here are the best 5 things to read. If you're kind of more medium, here are the best 5 things. And there's rental car advice and accommodation advice. But click on that start here page. You can hop on our newsletter too. We send stuff out. And we've started doing some workshops and stuff to really help people get started diving in for about an hour. Because I really truly believe about 4 or 5 hours of learning this and you can become basically an expert. Like you can start traveling for free. So it's not really as hard. And the return on investment, Grant, I think you'll speak to this. I mean, when you're getting, I've probably flown hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of flights in the last 4 years for, you know, a little bit of time learning it. And if you are someone who's going to travel a lot, it's crazy. So yeah, you can go to extrapackofpeanuts.com. You can hop on the mailing list. You can find everything there. And then there's some other projects we do too that are all, you know, you can find from there. So that's kind of the hub of where it all happens.
Awesome. We'll be sure and link up to that. But yes, you're right that there's a huge, massive rabbit trail that you can go down on this stuff. And Trav and I have certainly gone down that trail to the point that there are massive forums with lots of code words and just this whole other language. You and I have been to conferences all about just travel hacking. And when people find out, like, there's conferences, yes, and I've been to them, and they're wonderful. So, but it can really make some travel that seems far-fetched. It can make it very, very reasonable. So, Trav, thanks for the time, buddy. Appreciate you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, there you go. Hope you enjoyed that chit-chat chatteroo with my buddy Travis Sherry of Extra Pack of Peanuts. If you are not already into miles and points and what is commonly known as travel hacking, I would love, 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 love you to check that out and get into it a little more. Pay attention to how you earn those miles and points and making sure that you're using them, that you're not wasting them. You can take a lot of really, really cool trips with those things. I'll give you a quick example. In fact, this is actually something that's just recent. I'm going to be speaking at an event next March in the Philippines. It's Chris Ducker's conference called Tropical Think Tank. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if you haven't already, you definitely check that one out as well. But my wife and I are going to be traveling over there, and we just booked our tickets using miles to fly over there. And we paid $200 in taxes and fees to go over there. $200 in taxes and fees plus the cost of our miles to go over there. Now, check this out. We priced it out. We're going to be flying first class there and back, which would be pretty expensive without miles and points. Remember, we paid $200, but we priced it out. It's close to $15,000 for both of us to go over there if we paid for these tickets out of pocket. $15,000, but we're going to be able to go first class round trip for $200. Plus the cost of a handful of miles there. So definitely, definitely, definitely worth paying attention to because of some of that travel. I would never pay $15,000 for a first class flight, but to be able to do it now with miles and pay $200, yeah, that's a no-brainer. So just a quick example there, something that we literally just booked. All right, my friends, that wraps up episode 83. We'll catch you next time. You're awesome.